true, that spiritual, actual, factual answers to questions he asking. You find them inside you, beside you, reciting the records of Kashuk. We laughing, we drafting the passion through fabric. It's time for that comedy, dramedy, all of the fanciest, catchiest acronyms. Listeners, listen, we traveling. Consciousness is always unraveling. The reading you're having is mapping you back to your natural habitat. Abracadabra, it's magic, let's pass it. To top it off, the host are the classiest. Now, what were you asking for? All of the answers, what? All the answers.
Hi, Katie.
Oh my God. How long has it been?
Been like a month since we recorded last, and we've chatted a little bit, but we've been saving stories because things are happening in life.
Let's just inform the listening audience of the most important fact. You now have a porn stash.
Look, I'm currently in rehearsal for a play in which I play a basketball coach.
Or a basketball coach, sure.
In 1971 and also in 1989, both of which
porn stash
would rock this porn stash.
That's fair.
To be fair, this is probably a three thing. I don't know. No one asked me to grow it. One day I had most of a beard just because I hadn't shaved in several days. I was shaving off the beard.
Yeah.
I was like, you know what? I'm just going to leave the stash. They're going to ask. They actually are going to put me in a mustache for the 1970s scene, but it'll be a stick-on mustache. So there will be a difference between the 70s and the 80s. But this is a total perception thing. I don't see myself as a basketball coach from the Bronx,
nor
do you.
Nope.
Probably. And I just wanted to like just feel more something. And so like whenever I glance in a mirror and I'm like, hey, how you doing? All right. Okay.
Yeah.
And so it was more just like I wanted to live in that body a little bit more.
Yeah,
and so putting the stash on for now, and then I'll shave it off when we go into tech and be clean shaven. And then they'll stick one on me for the 70s scenes.
That's delightful. God, we need to release a photo with this one because you look insane.
Okay, let me see if I can get it good. I'll just take a picture and put it on
fantastic.
I'll send it to the...
I'll
take a good selfie and send it to Desmond to put it in the show notes.
Delightful.
Oh my God. Okay. So that's it. I'm going to tell you a quick story and then we'll jump right into the shit you got going on.
I'm really happy to hear anybody's story but my own right now. So please.
Oh my God.
Fill me in.
What is going on? Nothing. Just flew down to San Diego for two days real quick. To see Rami's show. So I'm in their apartment right now recording.
Hi,
but I was supposed to be here a few hours ago. Got on the plane. No problem. Got to the airport. Plenty of time. Got through security in 4 minutes tops. Like it was just like, brah.
Nice.
Yay to TSA pre-check. I recommend it to everybody if you're doing any traveling. And then waited around for a while, had a coffee, had enough time to have a coffee and a poop because that's what happens when I drink coffee. And then got on the plane, sat on the plane for a good 45 minutes, maybe more. And they were like checking in with us occasionally. And then they're like, all right, they found us another plane. First, they got the people off who were going to miss their connection and sent them straight to their destination. And then they got us off, walked us down to another place, got on the plane and flew here, you know, 2.5 hours later than we were going to be.
Okay.
But the moral of the story was actually just how utterly lovely it was that everybody was cool.
Aww.
There was no Karening. There was no, I have a thing that's important, you know?
Oh,
everybody's
nice.
And there were people who were like, shit, I'm missing this thing. But they were like, what are you going to do? This is what's happening.
Yeah.
And like, and then the people at the gate were like super informative and patient. They were like, hey, everybody, just letting you know what's going on. We're going to get you on the plane. It's, you know, and like, and that's cool. Relevant to what we talked about in rehearsal the other day. Our director said something about like looking for the moments of the sublime when you're just touched by something that probably wouldn't necessarily even be something that you'd be touched by.
Mm-hmm.
And I find myself sometimes getting fucking teary-eyed from customer service. We've talked about this a little bit.
Oh, I relate to this.
And wanting to tell people like, hey, you, thank you. And like,
yes.
I fucking get tears in my eyes when I feel that. Like, oh, everybody here is just being a good goddamn human.
Ugh, isn't it the
coexisting,
best?
Trying to get to where they're going and everybody's helping and everybody's just like, this is, can we just operate on that principle?
Right. Yep. Yes. And the fact that so many people don't operate there, that when people do, it's such a delight.
Right. And he used the word sublime. And I was like, I love that. Like, those are the moments of the sublime.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Anyway.
You're not going to believe how relevant that is to what I'm about to tell you.
Oh, that's I can't fucking wait. Katie left me a message yesterday saying, I'm not telling you anything because I want to tell you the story.
You have to back up. You have to give more context. So, we've been leading up to opening night of this play for months and a couple years in a way. Because I've been talking about doing this forever and then finally did it. And it's a lot of stress. And we're leading up. So my good friend Cassidy messages me like, so how the fuck was it? Like after opening, how was it? And gets no response from me for about 48 hours, which is not typical for me. I'm usually like instantaneous response.
Right.
And finally today or yesterday, I said, I would like to say the following words. I'm not going to say any words because I'm going to save it for the podcast because I don't think I can go through it again.
Right.
I'm going to do it once.
So buckle up, buttercup.
Yeah. I've been saying this thing in the curtain speeches. I'm like, I would usually say to people, sit back, relax, and enjoy the show, but it's a Peter Nocturne play. So instead I'm saying, sit down, strap in, lube up. Good luck.
Our friend Melina says, who does her own podcast, she says, sit back, relax, or sit up and stress out. You do you, or something like that.
That's like, really good.
However you want to listen, do it.
It's up to you.
It's up to you. Sit up and stress out if you need.
Snort some coke.
Do some Adderall if that's what it's you want.
Get a hooker. Focus up. Relax. Don't focus. Get high. Whatever you want. Live your life.
But do listen to my podcast.
Yeah, while you're listening. Okay, so I'm going to tell you the sublime. Uh-huh. And the things that you would want to apply everything you just said to.
Okay. The obscene or the absurd?
Yeah. Obscene. Obscene. Let's go with obscene. Let's go with obscene. And how do you make fiasco an adjective?
Fiascorific.
Fiascophic.
Fiascophic.
Yeah. Sure.
Fiascophic is a good one. Let's go with that.
Okay.
I'm just going to let you know, you have about 18 minutes.
I know. don't worry. So the sublime, my God, in the last milliseconds of preparation, we got the tech working correctly. The lights and sound hit all their goddamn fucking marks. The fucking thing the platform got rotated correctly at the right time. The podiums come on and off. The bed hits the mark. Like it all just on the first performance, just boom. Actors, wizards of talent and amazingness. Everything. Boom, boom. All the jokes. The audience laughed the entire time. It's a comedy, so you need them to. Warm audience, welcoming audience. The playwright was there. He has since, after the show, he was like, I can't believe how good it was. I'm bringing all my friends back. You nailed the actors are so connected, but then the pacing is so good and the comedy is there. And oh my God, happy as a clam. My friend who's a theater professor loved it and brought all her students and they loved it and they laughed the whole show. It was like a great success in terms of the play happening and working and all the things you could think like could possibly, like you're producing a play, direct a play, your mind is just on every single problem that could occur within the play. So that's where your brain is. And then, all those things go off without a hitch. What a great evening, right?
Story over.
Okay. So that, remember as I tell you this, that somehow, this is where it's your airplane story. Somehow miraculously, everybody in that audience and everybody on that stage was acting the way you just described. They were all like, things
happened.
Everyone
got on board for the thing, whatever it was.
Got on board and had a lighthearted, it's fine, attitude. Okay, so we get to the venue 2 hours early to do our final setups and things we need to do. The venue is shaped like, for the listener, if you can imagine, like picture the theater is like a circle and coming out of the circle, there's three hallways. Okay. One to the left, one to the right, and one up out the top center. So the building is kind of a combination of a bunch of rooms at the ends of the prongs. And the prongs, remember, are hallways that connect all the rooms.
Okay.
So it's like a circle at the bottom with three fingers coming out, basically.
Mm-hmm.
The shared space, aka the lobby, is like the space that connects all the three hallways just outside of our walls, our theater walls. I walk into the convention center. It's not a convention center, the community center, where all these hallways are sharing different or connecting different spaces. And there is, at full volume, I mean, think of the loudest rock concert you've ever been to. There is a quinceañera happening with a live band that is playing at 100. I'm talking about full volume live band playing 20 feet from our venue, down one hallway in a room with double doors. Are you still there?
Yeah.
Okay, because you froze for a second.
I'm frozen with horror.
Yeah.
This is my nightmare. This is why I don't want to ever be in charge, because of things like this.
Mm-hmm. It's a good move you're making. You're making good choices with your life.
Even with feet first, like, I love to be second.
Good call. You're very smart. Yeah. Not only is there the equivalent of, like, imagine you went to a Megadeth concert, but you're in the audience of the Megadeth concert and you decide, I'm going to produce a play where people have to hear the words that the actors say, but I'm going to build a thin, like a yurt in the middle of this Megadeth concert's stadium, the audience part. And I'm going to just do a play in this thin yurt while this Megadeth concert goes on. Okay. Uh-huh. So I walk into this and I go up to the lady who's there, who's works for the city. Now the city, little backstory, the city of San Ramon, they should be fucking named, schedules this room where the quinceañera rock concert is happening. Uh-huh. The lady, there's a lady, and I won't name her, who works for a company called Venue Tech. They manage the theater. They do the theater scheduling. We now have learned that the person who schedules for the city rooms and the Venue Tech scheduler, they don't compare calendars. When people like me pay them $14,000, for example, to do a play there. So not only do they not compare calendars, they don't tell a renter like myself what might be going on opening night or other nights. For example, a quinceañera with a very loud, I'm talking about Megadeth concert loud, not like, could you turn it down a little loud, like impossibly loud, band playing at it. Okay. So I come in. I see what's happened. The lady there who works for the city informs me that this is booked from 5 p.m. to midnight. Our show is 8 to 10, and that there's really nothing they can do. So I go into handle it mode and I go, okay, could I speak with the mom maybe of the child? Or could I speak with like the event planner? I speak with the event planner. She has no agency. She's like, oh, you got to talk to the mom. Because I'm thinking, I'll just appeal to this woman's sense of empathy and explain the situation and say, like, is there any way that, like, maybe
just for 2 hours, you guys took a little music break for 2 hours,
or just like, I wasn't even gonna go there. I had been told there would be a DJ shift, like they'd be going from a live band to a DJ. So my idea was like, what if the DJ just plays at like a 7 instead of a 50 on a scale of 1 to 10? And so the mother is called out and she comes with her adult daughter. The mother does not speak English. She speaks Spanish, which I happen to speak.
Yeah.
The daughter does speak English perfectly. The long and short of that conversation was, I'm now crying. I can't stop the tears. They're just coming down my face, but I'm being very calm and I'm saying things like, thank you so much for coming out. I'm sorry to interrupt your party. This room right here, see the wall right there? That's a theater. And they're like, okay, the daughter's like translating and I'm saying every other sentence in Spanish to be like, hey, I speak Spanish, you know, whatever. we're going to do a play and there's going to be people. If you go inside that theater, we can hear literally every word your DJ is saying and you're the person on the mic of the band. And every note of that music is playing on our stage. Is there any way you'd be willing when they switch to the DJ to just take it down just a hair so that maybe we won't get so much sound bleed in our space? And the girl's translating back and forth. And I see the mother's face get really like, fuck you look on it. And she's wearing like an evening gown and her tits are out and it's like hot lady time. And they're in a whole other world. This is their 15-year-old is 15.
This is a quinceañera. It's very important.
Big deal. So the mom, I hear her say in Spanish to the daughter, this is not really my problem. I paid for this room. So I don't think we can help them. And then, and I hear it and I start to respond in Spanish, but then the daughter looks at me and she can tell that I've heard it. And she's like, you understood that, right? And I go, I did. I just, can you just tell her, I don't think this is on her. This is clearly the city made an error doing this. Like, I don't mean to make anybody feel like you should not be having to deal with this. Please tell her, I should not be talking to you. This should not be happening. But because it is, I just wonder if you could extend it just a little bit of, help me a little bit, like just a little, the volume down just a little. And the mom walks away. The daughter's like, yeah, sorry, we paid for it. So this is what's up. All right, good luck. And walks away. And she's like chugging a beer. And that, at that point of the night, is my final hope. Like,
you have nobody else to appeal to.
In that moment, it's about to get worse. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Two levels worse. Okay, so the city woman, I know we have 9 minutes. The city woman says, we're going to call in other staff and they're going to come in and help. And what we'll do is, together as a team, she says to me, you and me and the staff that will come, we will police the hallway so that no kids that are screaming and running, because they were right behind us screaming and running, full volume kids with a thin wall between screaming kids and our show. The stage is just right behind one wall, screaming kids on the other side. Okay. Drunk men on their phones, like, ¿qué pasa? ¿A qué hora viene? Okay, perfecto. Like full volume yelling, drunk men, kids blowing, popping balloons, pop, like that. I mean, just party chaos.
Yeah.
The party itself was in a different room, but people were coming in and out. Every time they would open the double doors, you'd hear like Megadeth concert out of 500. Then they would close the doors and it would be Megadeth concert out of 499. This group of people show up quite quickly. I'm quite impressed with how quickly they got there. The dude who runs the city, the whole thing, the community center, we're going to call him the devil.
Okay.
He shows up, white guy, red hair. Devil. He shows up and he's got two 16-year-olds with him. Maybe they were 20 boys who are, I have met over the weeks before rehearsing, and they're very sweet people, but very passive. No, not a lot of agency, no right. voice. One time I asked if I could like use their printer and they had a meltdown. They were like, but the ink doesn't, but sometimes it's, we'll try. And over 8 hours, they were like, I'm sorry, we called someone and then my boss came and we don't have paper. So, I mean, they couldn't make a printer work.
Yeah.
So.
Not a lot of hope.
I'm like, so you called two 16-year-olds and this guy. Okay, let's see what this guy is going to, how are we going to work together to, what's the plan? We're going to call him the devil. Just, you know, for no particular reason.
No, I can't imagine why.
So the devil says to me, he's like, you understand how, as annoying as this may be for your event, if we interrupt their event, that's as annoying for them as this is for you. And I said, actually, no, I disagree, because I have like a contained space where actors are saying words and audience are sitting there quietly and you can't hear any of it. They have a rock concert that is spilling out into everywhere and ruining the thing inside the contained space where we're not bothering them. And he was like, no, but if you shush the kids in the hallway, then they can't have their fun. And I'm like, when you scheduled these two events at the same time, what was going on there? Did you not think this would be a problem? And he's like, well, we don't have anything to do with the scheduling of that theater. And I go, oh, okay. So there's two different groups that schedule these two rooms. He goes, yeah. I go, so when you didn't communicate with each other, that's where the problem started. Like, I'm just in full,
because yeah.
he's giving me.
Not my problem vibe tip.
Not my problem. And also, I drove here to tell you not my problem.
Yeah.
I didn't drive here to help you. I drove here to tell you not my problem. Then he says, and I'm like, so I hear your point in theory that we could irritate each other, but we're not actually doing that. So I just need your help. Like, what can we do? Here's a solution. And I propose the idea. What if all of us here, these two 12-year-old boys and you and me, just walk up and down the hall the whole time that the show is happening and just ask the kids to be a little quieter, explain to each group of people that are talking and that are drunkenly whatevering, hey, do you mind like take the volume down a little? And they're like, okay, we can agree to that. But as I can agree to that, but I'm going to need a little less pushback from you. I could start crying right now just thinking about when he said that sentence to me, because I don't know that I'm doing a good job conveying how this went down. But I realized in the moment he said that, he was it was so mansplainy gaslighting, both of those things. It was like, he was like, you got to get quieter and be in your little box that I need you to be in so I can comfortably do nothing about this problem, because he proceeded to do nothing about it. Side note. And I just want you to be quieter and be what I feel like you should be so that I'll even listen to you or entertain the notion of helping you. And I had this moment where I realized, oh, I'm about to, these are my choices. I can switch into soft, sweet lady voice that makes this man feel comfortable and maybe he'll help me, which is like all of the trauma of my childhood was me being not me so that maybe the people around me would not hurt me.
Right.
And I know how to do that because I'm from trauma. So I'm like, oh, I have to go into a trauma response. I'm consciously watching, okay, I can either from a having survived trauma place, make myself small so that this dick in front of me can feel comfortable putting itself into the metaphoric vagina of my soul. Or I can be honest with him about he's being a dick and he'll just not help for sure. So I do the first thing for a few minutes. I'm just like, okay, I understand. So sorry if my tone was offensive in any way. I apologize. I'm just wondering, how can we collaborate together to solve the problem? I'm like a seething cauldron of rage under it, but I'm doing like my best acting work I've ever done.
Yeah.
And he's like, thank you. I appreciate the tone shift. At which point I wanted to punch him in his mouth.
Oh, yeah.
With his own devil dick.
Yeah. Grab his dick and just repeatedly bash his face with it. I want to also right now.
Okay. We have 3 minutes. So I'll just wrap this up like this. I spoke to him how he wanted to be spoken to. And the result of that was I went back in the theater because they told me to go back in the theater to watch my play and just enjoy myself. And I continued to hear so much loud interruption that I knew they weren't doing anything. So I left the theater to check so that I could police the situation because they weren't doing anything. And every time I came out, they were standing in a little group, the 17-year-olds and him, talking. Not going to the screaming children, not going to the men on the phone. So I would go to the screaming children and the men on the phone and go, hey guys, I'm so sorry to interrupt. I know this is your party, but there's a play going on right here. Do you mind just like taking it down? And they'd all be like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. Sure, totally, no problem. The devil would then approach me and tell me I was not allowed to speak to these people and that this is not allowed. And I said, so remember a minute ago when we had a plan that together we were going to police the halls? And he was like, this is not okay. What you're doing is not okay. And I was like, I need you to explain how and why. When this is happening at our event, how is this not okay that I'm politely asking people to be a little quieter near the door? And he's like, because you can't. I went back in the theater and I sobbed quietly in the back row. And then I came out again. I was just quietly walking in and out. You wouldn't have noticed me. And I came out and they had all left. The people that had been assembled to help. The devil left. The 17-year-olds left. So there was one little lady named Margie with red hair, and she was just left by herself, not policing anyone. The volume got worse. It got louder. The doors were more open. They all just abandoned the entire situation. They just left. And the end of the story ends with a woman at our table where I have a friend. She's like in her late 60s. She has long gray hair and she has doe eyes, like big, like blinky, blinky, doe, sweet lady. Yeah. She's like something out of a Hobbit movie. She's just like gray hair and she makes homemade blondies and she has chocolate treats. She's like the sweetest woman you've ever met. There's a woman and her husband or her boyfriend at the table, the chocolates table, which was our concession table, but we didn't care. We're making money. Sure, we'll sell to these people. And she's speaking full volume. She's like, I want like 8 cookies and like, and I come up and I go, I am so sorry to bother you. I know you're just trying to buy a cookie. Real quick, we have a play going on in there. I just wonder, I'm so sorry. I feel terrible asking. Would you be willing to take the volume down just a little bit? Her response to that was to then harass, taunt, and yell at myself, the Hobbit lady, and Margie for the next 15 minutes with threats to go on the stage. So there was an upstage door she could just walk through and be on stage. So she would say things like, no, I'm going to sit right here at this fucking table right here. You don't want me here loud? Am I loud enough now? How is this? And I'd go, it's just that I'm just trying to explain. There's a play right here and they hear you. And she's like, I don't give a fuck what they fucking hear. That's the stage? Is that the door? Can I go through it? I was like, please don't. I'm begging you. Please don't go through the door. I think I'll go in there right now. Margie comes over and gently puts her hand on the woman's arm and it says, ma'am, could you just go outside if you need to be this loud? And she said, did you fucking put your hands on me? You put your hands on me? Oh, I feel offended by that. I'm offended by that. I'm going to put you on TikTok and show the world that's how this fucking place runs. You with this ratchet ass bitch? Full volume. This goes on violently for 15 minutes. Margie disappears, stops trying to help. I try every tactic I know. None of it works. I try backing off. She follows me. I try going outside so that she'll follow me and be loud outside. She doesn't leave the table because she knows I don't want volume at the table. So she stays at the table. She starts to threaten my cookie lady. What you looking at? What's good? You want to go? What's Gouda? What's Gouda? To a blinking 65-year-old Hobbit woman. Eventually, there was a moment where she was about to go on the stage from the upstage door. So I put my body between her and the door. I didn't even have my arms up because I was just like, I don't know what to do. And I have my phone in my hand and I dialed 911 and I had my phone in my ear. And I was just like, I guess we have to call the police. I'm mouthing to Margie, should I call the police? And she's like, raises her hands like, I don't know. That's the support I'm getting. So as I'm dialing 911 and the people answer on the other line, I hear miraculously the audience applauding and the actors exiting. The play has ended miraculously right before this woman was gonna. So what I did was I followed the actors into the dressing room and hid there because this woman now wanted to harm me physically. After I cried a little bit, I tried to hide it from the actors in a different room so they could just have their moment. I mean, but yeah, they've been through this whole thing too.
They've been dealing with it their whole play.
Mm-hmm. Eventually, long story long, I was able to leave the dressing room and say goodbye to my audience, all of whom were saying like, oh my God, that play was so fucking good. Oh my God, those actors, Katie, you should be so proud. Now I've sobbed.
Like, I didn't see a fucking bit of it.
I've sobbed 8 times. I've been in the middle of war the whole time. I don't know that. I every time I would come in, they'd all be laughing. And I was like, okay, I guess the play's going well. Peter Nocturne, the playwright, was there. Came out, he was like, Katie, it's a triumph. The pacing, the comedy, I can't believe it. And they were connected and listening. It's so good. And I'm like, I'm so sorry about the quinceañera. And he's like, well, I mean, yeah, that didn't even bother me. Anyway, the play.
Wow.
Everyone said that to me. This is where it comes back to your plane story. I went back to the actors and I couldn't stop the tears. And they were like, we're fine. We're sorry for you. We just focused and did our job and they were laughing. So it was a good show. There was background noise. We didn't like it, but like, yeah, everybody was super fucking chill. I can't explain it. Like one buddy of mine, a friend of mine's husband texted me after he was like, oh my God, the play was so good. Those actors, they're so good. Oh my God, all this stuff. And he goes, I'm sure you were probably pretty stressed with that whole quinceañera thing. And I'll tell you, usually at a play that would pull me out of it, but I was just so enraptured by what your actors were doing. I just didn't care. You know, Janice Stevens, most critical, most talented, most fucking vocal theater lady of all time. She'll tell you what's what. She hugged me. She was like, Katie, when are we meeting in Sacramento? I need to see you. We need to talk. This was a triumph. It was incredible. And I said, what about the music? And she was like, oh, I just made it work in my head. All right. Call me when you're in Sacramento. So good. Incredible. And I can tell when Janice is full of shit. I'm just saying people loved it and didn't mind. And I can't understand it.
Yeah, but I'm still stuck in the trauma of what you had to go through. Like, you know, and I guess like then the lesson is like, well, shit, we could have done something or done nothing and we would have had the same result and less violence in my soul, but still shouldn't have had to happen.
Yeah, there's a lot we could say about the lessons. I did a lot of crying over the next 48 hours. That's Jesus. Why I couldn't tell you the story because I was crying for 2 days.
That's insane.
To wrap up with the following day, we had 2 shows Sunday. Beautiful, silent hallways, no drama. We did 2 excellent shows. They went off without a hitch. The audiences loved it. They're smaller audiences than I want. So now my job is just get butts in seats.
Yeah.
So like the show was great, but this chaotic, traumatizing, terrible thing happened around it, which has led to,
I'm sure you've had to talk to the people at the community center and be like,
what you're going to do now is you're going to send me a list of all the events that are happening on the dates I've rented. And when there's anything with a lot of people in that room, I'm going to cancel those shows.
And you're going to refund my money.
The money for those days. You're also going to refund me for this day because fuck off.
Yeah.
And the woman who I deal with was like, I don't think I should have a lot of pushback from the city when I propose that idea. And I was like, great, because otherwise we will be seeking legal counsel because this is so fucked up.
Yeah.
And to her credit, she has been very empathetic. She was the only person out of this whole situation who the next day when I came back to do the Sunday shows, she was there. She wasn't there on the day of death. She was like, I want you to know from my heart to yours, I'm with you. This should never happen. I'm so sorry. And I don't think we'll have a problem getting you refunded for those dates. Like, we'll work it out. I'm so sorry. And that was great because on that day I had no rage in me. I was just a puddle of tears with her. So we may cancel a show or two because
if there's a problem. Yeah. And can we get that asshole fired, please? Can we get the devil removed?
That'd be nice.
Can we exercise that space?
That'd be nice.
I guess we, is our person here yet? Do we need to
run? Yes, she is. And I'll let her in 1 second. I just want to, it's like, I kind of like can't leave a story like that without just saying I feel like it needs because of what our podcast is, like a, what is the spiritual lesson or you know, what's a girl to do with a narrative like that? You know, and it's just miraculous to me that you told the story you told.
Right
before I told you this, because people just being kind in response to it. Like when Peter told me, the playwright, that he loved what we did, I wept while he was hugging me from like just the pure kindness of his willingness to watch and enjoy the show despite this like constant influx of crazy that was happening. Like human kindness in the presence of crazy was so extra incredible to me because outside those doors, there was the opposite of that.
There was violence and emotions and all the, And also you had every version of that. Like everybody's response could have been kindness. Right. And you're right. How could we work together to deal with this problem that was a mistake, but we don't have, none of us have to rage against it. If we all agree to not rage against it, then we can do something. But if one person chooses to resist, then that breaks the whole system. That's another thing we were talking about today, which we can get into later.
No, I mean, that's the thing. Because it's true that too, on my end, me coming at the devil hot was not working. So I softened immediately.
Well, but neither was coming at him soft.
But that was my point. That didn't work either. He just wanted to dominate and be in control and let me know he was the boss.
Oh, he's the one who chose violence, to be honest, in a weird way, as did the mom. But the mom had her own set of things. This is my daughter's quinceanera. This is the only thing I've got. Like, this is everything right now. Please don't interfere with that. And I can understand. But she also could have gone, oh, that is a bummer. How could we do this?
Well, I mean, anyone there could have said like, God, that is a bummer. Hey, how about we'll take it from a 10 to an 8? Does that help you? Like, if it were me, I'd be like, oh man, I don't want to end my party, but like, I'll help you out. We'll take it to a 7. And then can we check in half an hour?
Yeah.
Anything. How about anything? Just anything.
Or the devil could have done his job that he agreed to, which he did not do at all.
Oh, he also liked reminding me 2 different times that he's like, I don't have to be here. You know, I have an infant baby at home.
And I said, go, because you're doing nothing.
I said, why don't you go back to it then? I didn't call you to come. You don't have to be here. It's okay. You're not doing anything. So go back to your kid. And then he fucking did.
Good. Oh, God.
Here comes Rachel.
Yeah. All right. Let's recover our soul. We may need to recover our soul. We don't know what it means yet, but we'll talk to Rachel about it.
Hey, what's up? Rami here. So I just got really mad at one of my... fellow actors in the play that I'm in right now. I mean, I didn't yell at him or anything, but internally I was like, I'm really frustrated right now. It's because he broke one of the rules in my personal code of ethics. And this is what it is. So he had, he's a lovely human. I like him very much. He had a health incident that lasted multiple days. It happened twice. And he's fine now, but he didn't want to get checked out. He had his own ideas about what it is. Fine. I understand. I understand completely. He didn't want to get checked out and he didn't really receive any help, want to receive any help from anyone. Okay. So We are a team. And he's like our quarterback. He is the lead. He's in every damn scene, okay? And we all saw him suffering, and we all worried about him, and we all tried to help him, and he refused help. And we all watched him turn down, like, you know, the opportunity, or, you know, didn't want to get checked out, not getting checked out. And then we even all saw him go out for drinks, and that's when I got mad. That, you know, it's like, okay, if you're not gonna receive any of this help, at least fucking help yourself. Don't go out for drinks. Go home and take a bath or something, you know? Anyway, we are an ensemble. We are a team, and we are making magic together, right? And we need each other. And especially we need him. Like I said, he's the lead. So basically, the code is that this part of my personal code is like, he is behaving selfishly by refusing help, period. It is his job. Part of his job is to take care of himself in order for the group to thrive, you know? We all need him to be in good shape. And receiving help is the generous act. Refusing help is the selfish act. Rami's rules.
Hi, Rachel.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, how are you?
I'm good. Look at Cassidy. Oh my goodness. We were like 35 years later.
This is 35 years later. Katie, I don't know how much you know. Rev Rachel here and I went to high school together.
Oh, what?
Indeed.
No.
Indeed. Back in Los Alamos. And I have questions for you.
Oh, I'm excited.
So I'm just going to put my thumb on the scale and say, I want to jump in and lead the thing at first. And then I'm going to hand it over to you to do the much deeper shit.
I'm ready.
How does that sound?
Yeah, but let's give the listeners a little context on who Reverend Rachel is, and then I want to hear your thing. How does that sound?
I'm stoked. It's so fabulous to reconnect. Go, Cass. I want to hear all of
that.
Well, then
let's talk about the context of why the hell you're even here. Uh-huh. Originally, it is because I was like, you show up on my Facebook, and then your recover the your soul stuff started showing up, and your podcast started showing up like on the old socials, and I was like, what? You're doing a similar kind of similar, related in the same world as what we're doing. And I listened to an episode of your podcast. And I was like, damn it. Why is Rachel not coming on this podcast? This person I knew growing up from a small, very conservative, non-woo town.
Mm-hmm. But I grew up woo, which is one of the reasons why we left Los Alamos is because I was raised Buddhist.
That's my first question. I don't think I knew that there were other woos. Yeah. In my town.
So I was raised Tibetan Buddhist, and my mom, my middle name is Little Flower. I was raised total hippie child.
How did I miss this?
Because I was quiet. I was shy in high school.
You didn't go to the Unitarian Church, did you? Did you?
I never went to Unitarian. I found Unity.
I know Unity.
All right.
Unity Church.
Because I feel like Unitarian Church was like Los Alamos' weirdo dumping ground.
That's funny. Yeah.
So, which was me and my family.
Well, you went to Unitarian. That's fabulous. Because we never went to anything because my mom, you know, was going off and doing Buddhist stuff elsewhere. But she got sick of being a poor hippie. And so she went back and got her PhD. And that's how we ended up in Los Alamos. And her sort of story is that when she was getting her PhD, she met her future husband. And she said on that first date, she sat down and she said, I never tell anybody who I am. Because Los Alamos is so like, don't tell anybody who you are. And she told him exactly who he was. And the first thing he said was, we got to get you out of here.
Wow.
So that's one of the reasons why we moved. So then she moved to Boulder, Colorado, which is where I live.
When did you leave? Did you graduate?
I didn't. I left in 11th, after 11th grade, because we went to Europe for a year.
Okay. I didn't remember that, but you know, details 35 years ago.
Yeah.
Can you tell the listeners just, give a little context of why we keep referring to Los Alamos as this, like that we don't belong as woos in Los Alamos. What is Los Alamos, would you say?
No, I have beautiful memories of Los Alamos.
It's incredible. And it's a deeply spiritual ground.
And it's filled, it's a laboratory town filled with the smartest people in the world. So I just thought I was the dumbest rock, you know, being surrounded by people who were from these incredibly brilliant families.
Who were building, to be clear, mostly bombs.
My mother tells this story about how she would not do the testing on the plutonium. She wouldn't do the plutonium, and she used to always get in trouble. And she'd be like, "I'll get to it." But she wouldn't do it.
Oh, I love that rebellion through just putting it off.
Did you go to work day with your parents?
No, my parents didn't work at the lab.
Oh, they didn't?
My mom worked there for like a few months and was like, nope, toxic. My grandpa was like the first head of post-war. He was the head of personnel post-war. Like, he was big deal for a minute. Anyway,
wow.
Katie, you were going to ask a question.
You guys know that my dad works there now.
No.
At the lab? At Los Alamos lab?
My dad is the
CEO. He works for Sandia.
Hang with me. Okay. My dad is the CEO of a pulmonary research institute. They're studying lung cancer that is called Loveless Research Institute, that is based in Albuquerque, and their secondary lab is at Los Alamos.
Oh my gosh.
And
all connected.
And so I visit there all the time, and he gets government contracts to do things like aerosolize anthrax to pay for the research they're doing to save the world from lung cancer.
Fascinating.
Right. You got to take the devil's money to...
So my mom, when she first went back to the lab, when she first went back into science, she actually worked for this this program that was bringing women back to science. And it was in Los Alamos. But guess what she tested? This was the days of the cow mutilations. And she actually did scientific testing on the chemical structures around the cuttings of the cow mutilations.
So the cow mutilations, that was like, they didn't know what it was and cows were being mutilated. It was a chupacabra or it was aliens or.
Right. It was unknown. In the 80s.
Yeah. What cows would just show up mutilated. They wouldn't show up.
What was causing it?
Aliens.
Okay. That's
the truth is aliens. I don't know what they ended up saying, but that's what my mom came out of it. She was like, her research showed that there was high levels of elements that were not found on those levels anywhere.
What?
Yeah.
That's cool.
So, I mean,
Rachel, how did we know? You know, my mom was like the local radical. Everyone was afraid of Molly Brown in our town, my mom, because she was the local radical who was leading all the protests against everything. So, like, how did we never connect these dots? We had friends in common. We weren't like tight. We were like part of the same rough social fabric.
But wait, how is it that the energy out there is so, I've lived a lot in the Southwest at various points. It's so high frequency. I still don't get what you guys are talking about. You're saying that the town is so sciencey and intellectual that they're not open to spiritual stuff, even though the vibration of the land is that high?
I think there's a lot more spiritual stuff that's going on. Really gentle, lovely, wonderful people, but
yeah.
It's conservative, but not conservative like go to the South conservative. It's like, it's just, you
old
know,
school,
kind of old school. I mean, it was the safest place to grow up. It was a really beautiful. Cass was in the theater scene. I was a bebop between all the groups, wasn't really in any of the groups. It was a great, I feel very lucky to have grown up there, but I've never been back.
Oh, really? I've been back a little bit, very little, but my take was always as soon as I left, I vibed it. Like when I was there, it was great. It's a beautiful place to grow up, totally safe. You know, didn't have to lock your doors, walk to boom, all the things, you know. But I left and I was like, ugh, and I started to kind of like come out of it, out of the fog, and realize that like pretty much everybody's, at least one member of every household probably worked something top secret.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So no one was able to talk about anything. And I just feel like it was a town of lies in my head. That's what I kind of went away with. Like there's this veneer of beauty and wonderfulness and this undercurrent of like, well, we don't get to talk about anything or acknowledge anything because we can't talk about anything.
What decade are we talking about?
The 80s.
I graduated in 87.
Yeah.
Okay.
We so were the
cold, cold war, but
still cold war.
Mm-hmm. Got it.
Yeah. I mean, it was at that time, it was like 80% weapons work.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, then I came to Boulder, where no one worked that I, you know, in my family worked for the plutonium triggers, but you know, Rocky Flats is right up the street. And I do know, like, my best friend from high school and her brother worked at Rocky Flats. And a lot of people worked at Rocky Flats and they, you know, made the bombs and all that went together. And it's fascinating because to me, I'm only 54, right? But I feel like there's been these eras and this brings us back to what we're doing now. Like there's this raising of consciousness. So I have this great story, which my dad reminded me of the other day. My dad is a total hippie in Madrid, New Mexico. I mean, if you looked up folk hero hippie in the dictionary, there's my dad.
Wow.
So my dad told me the story when I went there for Christmas. And he said, because I listened to a lot of Ram Dass, I love Ram Dass. And he said, well, you know, Ram Dass used to hold you when you were a baby.
Eh?
I was like, tell me more. So yeah. Ram Dass was in Santa Fe a lot.
Uh-huh.
And so there's this story of him, like, just from when I was 6 months old, just, you know, just holding me and hanging out with me and getting a little baby time. And I just think that's amazing. So there's been these pieces, these sections where my parents were really in that whole world and they helped start the Buddhist Center in Santa Fe. And you know, that seems like forever ago, but it was only 50 years ago.
Right.
Yeah.
And Buddhism was like blew people's minds. My parents felt like their parents thought that they were going to go to hell. And, you know, what are you thinking that you're studying these things? And
yeah.
Right.
Now it's mainstream.
Yeah.
So, hey, were you guys involved at all or your mom with the Kadampa Buddhism out there? Mm-hmm. My dad's wife, who actually just passed in November, she was like very big into Kadampa. I think it's Kadampa Buddhism. And they live in Albuquerque, and she would go out to not quite Flagstaff, but in that direction out the 40. And there was this beautiful temple there. And she like herself by hand gilded the temple with gold leaf.
Wow.
She's an artist, and she would just do these beautiful gold leaf overlays onto all kinds of shit for the temple. And when she passed in November, we all, of course, went to Albuquerque and were in the temple that she worked at and was a huge part of. And my God, the energy in there was really beautiful. Anyway, so it's just funny you're talking about Buddhism and that area, because I have so much experience with Susan's particular strain of Buddhism in that area.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. Stupa is a stupa. I mean, it's just like the most amazing energy.
Okay, so here we are, present day. You guys haven't talked in a long time. You grew up in the same town. Rachel, I looked at your site.
Yeah, I was like, just call me Rachel, please.
Okay, great. And
I have to call you Rev Rachel every time we refer.
It seems like you are a person, I'm going to say what I think, and then I'd love to hear what's reality, that you're a person who's been, you know, working through stuff and on a path like a lot of us, and that you had a kind of bigger level, I'll say just from what I read on your website, breakdown in 2018-ish, and then something broke open that built this kind of soul work you do now. And I just would love to hear anything you feel like sharing about what's the ride been and what happened that was different in 2018 or 19, whatever that was, that then birthed what you do now. And before you answer that, am I correct in remembering that you're a reflector?
I was looking at my human design while I was waiting to be put in, and I couldn't find it from my new phone. So I'm not entirely sure.
Do you have your birth date to the minute? You must.
I think I sent it to, it's.
Okay, you gotta give me a second, but feel free to start telling us the things. And
yeah, so, you know, what's interesting, having come from this spiritual upbringing, I had like this foundation of faith. And I think one of the things that happened to me in a way was I was raised by a Buddhist mom. There was no fighting. There was no chaos. My mom and my parents divorced amicably when I was, you know, 8 years old. And I was sort of this gentle spirit, and I went out in the world and my mind was fucking blown, to be honest. Like,
yeah.
I didn't know how to deal with conflict.
Of course.
And the way that I dealt with it was,
What was the time of your birth to
the minute? It's coming in.
In an adobe house with no running water. Okay. So, you know, I had this crazy upbringing and then I went out into the real world and I was like really uncomfortable. I was uncomfortable in high school already, but I didn't party yet. So when I discovered drinking as a way to be comfortable in my skin, that started this journey of what eventually became full-blown alcoholism. And I found a guy who was sweet and funny and wonderful and drank like I did and matched all of my soul's work that I needed to do. And we built a family and two boys, and it got really hard and really complicated. And so there was a lot of really great times, but there was a lot of really, really difficult times. And of those 15 years that were really hard, it was really me not knowing how to not be a people pleaser, how to not play into fixing everybody and making everybody okay. And I just got lost. So when I got sober in 2018, it was really the first time that I realized I needed to save my own life for me.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I started doing the work through 12-step, what really happened is that all of the spiritual teachings that I had ever heard in my whole life funneled in a way like a transmission almost that like opened a door to an entirely new way of seeing and being in the world. And through that, I became a metaphysical minister. Through that, I just started telling my story on the podcast, and it started to resonate with other people who also struggle with codependence and addiction and people pleasing. And I would like to just say that, like, I am an entirely different person, and I'm actually living from a place that 90% of the time is really my own experience instead of trying to fix or please other people. So that's what soul recovery became. And then through that, coaching, and really the coaching is spiritual healing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's what's going on.
That's beautiful. Can I show you something?
Yeah.
This always happens.
Tell me, I want to see.
It's this incredible. So if you look, this is your chart. You're a generator. You're not a reflector. I don't know where I got that idea. The incarnation cross, I can tell you a lot of things about all this, but we'll get to that. The incarnation cross for each human being speaks to what is the day-to-day life of this person like when they are functioning correctly as themselves?
Mm.
And you talked a minute ago, I don't know if you remember saying this about, yeah, but it's the cycles we go through. Do you remember saying that?
Kind of. I never know what I say.
I know. I hear you. But you said, yeah, but it's also like we go through these cycles in life. Anyway, the incarnation cross is what your day-to-day life is filled with when you're functioning, not from conditioning, but from the correct functioning as yourself, the true self. Yours is called the left angle cross of cycles. Here's what it says. Your design has a very powerful transformational energy to get things done. Your cross is tied to the cycles that all life experiences. You understand that everything is born and then dies and is then born again. You have an innate sense about the cyclical process. Things are always changing, becoming better and better through the cyclical process of maturation. Your energy is part of this process, so it is most likely your education and career will cycle too. It is not likely that you will stay in the same job for 25 years unless that job can evolve and change with time. You are here to be a master of the maturation process.
Mm, I love that.
Now, you're also a 6-2, which is pretty special and matches exactly what you're describing. So 6-2s are... by the way, before I launch into this, I don't have to do this if this is not what you want to hear, but we're here and your chart is open, so we may as well.
Tell me everything, Katie. I love it.
Okay. So the 6-2 more than, okay. So the profile, if you look at this little term here, profile, profile is made of two numbers. The number on the left speaks to your conscious personality and the number on the right speaks to your unconscious body. So you have what we call a sixth line personality and you have a second line body. Cassidy's smiling because my theater company is called Sixth Line Studios because I am a 6-2 as well. Ah. And 6-2s are a little bit unique, a lot unique. So it's namaste. Nice to meet you. Now, What's interesting, so the 6-2 profile itself is known as the hermit role model. And what the sixth line is a role model of is we become, as we begin to function correctly as ourselves, we become role models of what it is to be ourselves. It's the role model of being yourself. It's not a role model necessarily of like how to live. It's a role model of like, wow, that person's really being them, which then, as we know through Al-Anon recovery and healing recovery and codependent, you know, integration healing, is the best teacher, right? If you're just being you and people go, wow, you could just be you, then they just choose it more and you become the role model of that. Another thing that's relevant about a sixth line personality is more than any of the other lines, by the way, there are only six lines, is that the sixth line has a tripartite life, three parts to the sixth line life. First 28 years, struggle, trauma, difficulties, challenges. 28 to 50, the sixth line is pulled up out of life in a certain way onto what's called the roof in human design. So there's a way that from 28 to 50, a sixth line is kind of removed from life and watching it from outside to a certain degree and feeling like it can feel like you're watching through a pane of glass, like the monkeys are doing things and we're looking and going, who are my role models? Who do I look up to? And it theoretically, what hopefully happens for six lines on the roof is they're doing their healing work from the first 28 years, from 28 to 50 while on the roof. At age 50, the third part of life begins for a six line. You get, quote, pulled off the roof into life. And you'll find yourself at age 50 more engaged with the three-dimensional reality around you than ever before, because it's what happens at what's called the Chiron returns in the chart of a six line. So you come off the roof having integrated as the complete role model of being your own unique self. The tension that you will experience, because every profile is two numbers, right? And they usually have some tension between them because that's what creates reality is friction. The second line body is a hermit. It's hermetic. It's a natural. And what it's here to be and do is it is born good at certain things. It is a natural. It's not like, let me put on all the makeup and wear all the fancy shit. It's like, I'm just into being natural. And I like to be at home doing what's natural to me, or in the world doing what's natural to me. We teach second lines, you're not here to like study shit you're not naturally good at already. But if you're naturally good at something, it's useful to study it to get even better at the thing you're naturally good at. Whereas, just to make the point, if you were a first lines come into this life fully ignorant of anything, having no idea how this reality works, not natural at anything. And they have to study and pull in information from every direction because there's a constant sense of insecurity for a first line. So they're doing what we call building a foundation their whole life. They're like, I'm going to do this and learn this and study this so I can have some kind of foundation. That's like the basis of a first line's life. Not so for a second line. Second line comes in already knowing stuff. I've karmically been through things. I am a natural at these new things, at whatever this incarnation makes you a natural at. And I'm here to develop what I'm a natural at. But I'm going to be pretty hermetic a lot of the time. And remember, in your case, because it's in the body position, it's your body that needs the hermetizing. But your personality is going to need to be out there being transpersonal and relational. As
that is so spot on. Plus, yay, the card I pulled in my tarot this morning was the hermit.
Boom. Which makes me remember another thing that's relevant about a 6-2 is that it is the most karmic lifetime one can have. So when you're a 6-2, everything that is occurring is the unfolding of karmic completion. Everything that's occurring is like you're like tying up loose ends, you could say. It's not a very traditional life in the sense that all the other profiles come in to be like, I'm doing me and from my meanness, I'm building my life. But a 6-2 comes in and is like, okay, things are doing me. Things are doing me. I am being done. Oh, now I'm doing this. It's a karmic unfolding. And we, of course, have, you know, agency. I don't mean to say there's no agency, but you'll find, and I'm sure you have, no matter how you apply your agency, there's a kind of, yeah, but you're at the mercy of the all that is in a way that some other people can get away with being less so. Another way you could say that is you're at the mercy of the divine and it will do with you what it will. And you can think you're in charge, but not as a 6-2, you're not.
That's so, you know, what's so fascinating about that, Katie, is it totally resonates with me because I do feel like you know, I got sober at 48, but really it was at 50, almost exactly, that like literally the door opened. Just yesterday, I was speaking at a Unity church in Denver, and people came up after and, you know, were talking about how the talk affected them or whatever. And there was this really interesting man who came and talked to me. He was one of those people, sometimes you talk to people and they're kind of so far out there that you're trying to figure out like what it is that he's saying. And he was saying, I've known you from another lifetime. And most people don't say that to you. But it didn't freak me out. But I was like, you know, I don't remember high school. I don't remember my past lifetimes. You know? And he said, you're not supposed to. And then he came up later and he said, you don't remember your other lifetimes because there was so much suffering that it's not yours to hold on to now. And that was a really like, that was like a message that was really interesting. And then he said, and you know, you're always checking your ego. You know, it's always a struggle after I give a talk or something. It's like, it is not I that does the work. Like it's really source channeling through that is saying and doing the things, right? So I'm cautious of like taking claim. But he looked at me and he said, you're one of the purest ones I've seen. Aww. And I thought that was really beautiful. And I wanted to claim it because when I'm in this space that you're describing where it's like, I am watching, but I really do need to be connected to source. Like this is who I am, but not because that's who I am. It's because it's the truth. Mm-hmm. I feel pure. I feel my most self. Mm. And I love to be in this room. This is a little she shed in the backyard where I feel my truest self. And I still struggle being out in the world as Rachel. Yeah. I did in junior high and high school. I did all growing up. It's still a battle to try to figure out how to be a human being in this life.
Mm. What specifically, because I'm going to show you something, I think. What specifically are the struggles that for you that make it hardest to be Rachel in the world with people?
I think that I'm working on it, but what it's been is like watching people struggle.
Oh, okay.
Wanting, you know, it, having people
suffer,
having people
you.
Suffer mm-hmm. around me.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
I feel that like a fucking knife in the heart right now.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. What's it, that's been up for you too, Cass?
Yeah. That idea has been coming up for me. I was in a big group meditation and they asked, you know, what do you want to bring to the light tonight? I was doing this with Denise, the group she sits with online. And what came to me was like, I want those who are struggling around me to get some relief. And that's a selfish desire because I can't fucking handle it. You know, like I want them to get some, and that's my codependency act talking.
Right, right.
Because when I'm not seated in myself, I'm going to react to all the suffering around me. Like, oh God, you got to be better. You got to be better. So I don't know if that's sort of what you're talking about.
Yeah. And also the more I kind of come into this period of my life, I have such a, like a, just a deep compassion for the people's that this is the journey that they have to be on. And, you know, like people will come to me as a minister and then they're like, why is there war? And why is there evil? And why, you know, and that's a big subject.
Mm-hmm.
Because there is.
We talk about it a lot here. Mm-hmm.
Because it is. And and so my heart just is like, I am held with this level of compassion that I didn't know how to hold before because I thought I was supposed to fix it or that I could fix it, you know, and I can't fix anybody. It's not my job to fix anybody. Anybody who comes for counseling with me or listens to a talk or a podcast, I don't have anything to tell them that they don't already have within them, you know, and I'm just a vessel to give them what they already know so they can hear it and remember it because I'm doing that for me. Mm-hmm. And this healing, which you're talking about, like this healing of myself, these removals of my bondage of self, of my suffering that I so was immersed in, I don't feel those things anymore. And through that, you become a role model to the other people. I don't have anything to give them that they don't already have, but I have to have it first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's recovery talk. And that's real. Yeah, that's recovery right there, right? That's just like 12-step baseline, boom.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's great. Would you say that your main program or system is, I mean, for yourself is Al-Anon, or is it, is that a thing you talk about?
I actually have stepped, I mean, I
out of it.
I refer to 12-step and Al-Anon, but yeah. really it's spirituality. Really, yeah, it's Buddhism and mysticism, and Course in Miracles is huge for me. So, mm-hmm. really, those doors were like the little baby doors that bring you into a large, yeah. much larger scope.
Yeah, they talk about 12 steps as like spiritual kindergarten.
It's like if it gets you through the door, awesome. It got me through the door. I needed someone to kick my for ass sure. and go to a meeting on a regular basis so that I would stop being with my head up my ass and doing shitty things to myself. But once you get to a certain place, then it was like having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. Now I eat, sleep, breathe, drink spirituality. It's everything to me.
Beautiful. That's great. That's great. Do you want to hear more about any of this?
Yeah. Tell me everything. I do have my hard stop in about 15 minutes because I have my support group online.
Oh, fun. What kind of, tell us about that. Maybe people want to know so they can join.
Yeah. So soul recovery for me is a community. And what I realize is we're so in need of other people who we can relate to. And this is the thing I think about this raising of the consciousness that Cassidy is, you know, referring to in Los Alamos. There was so much secretism. The truth is, I think a lot of this stuff was happening in houses, but there wasn't a lot of talking about it. And what I love is that the more that we talk, the more that we share what's going on with us, the more that you find, oh, you will attract energetically to the people who are your people. And so when I started doing this work, I immediately didn't think of this as like a business. I thought of it as a community. How can I grow this as an alternative community to church or to a spiritual center? So to me, Recover Your Soul is a spiritual center, and my podcasts are teachings, and they reflect my own life. And so everybody who listens to me is coming in and stepping into this community of people who get it. And so once a month, I have a free Zoom support group, first Monday of every month from 6 to 7 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. And we just get together, and it has a like a flavor of a meeting, but not really. You know, it's more of just a place for us just to come together and really be seen and witnessed.
So I wanted to hear that, because that's the setup for what I'm about to show you is written into who you are.
Fabulous.
So get ready for this wacky shit. So what you just described, okay, let me back up. Everything you're looking at in your chart here, everybody.
I'm laughing just because I love when Katie gets excited. She starts to go like, okay, wait. So, okay, but before I tell you that,
this also happens every time. What's amazing with human design is people come in and they go, yeah, you know, so it's all about trees and wind. And then I go, well, you have channel 35-7, which is about trees and wind. And it's like written there. It's unreal. So I'm just like a constantly mind blown by this fucking roadmap of reality that was channeled and written down for people. Because in 12-step, we used to always say, like, if only there were a roadmap for life. There is now. And we've evolved to where we can each have it. The trick is it's different for each individual, and there are no universal one truths. There are, but there also aren't, is what I would offer. Mm-hmm. So everywhere you see in these are called centers, triangle, triangle, square, square, triangle, triangle, square, square, triangle. Those are the centers of the body. And then if you see a little line hanging off, that's called a gate. If it doesn't go all the way across, it's a gate. But if it goes all the way across, like this guy here, that's called a channel. Mm-hmm. Everything you see that has color here, the yellow and the green and the red and the black and the brown, that's the what we would call like the Rachel-ness of Rachel. Like, who is Rachel? It's where there's definition in this chart. Where it's white, these two centers, you have two open centers, and you have these channels here that are white. Where our chart, in our chart, things are white is where we are open, receptive, creative, spiritually connected, and we are inconsistent and unreliable. So there's, you could say there's no Rachel-ness in here, but there's a lot of openness in here. There's a ton of Rachel in your head and your Ajna. The questions you're asking and the way you answer them has a very fixed, consistent, reliable way of functioning in your head. Something to know about having definition in the head, by the way. For no human being, according to human design, are the answers to your life in your head. The answer is in what we call following strategy and authority. For you, your strategy is respond and your authority is emotional, which is down here, which I'll talk about in a second. But the head has no answers for you, but because you have definition, fixed, consistent, reliable way of asking questions and processing answers, your head, yours, because you have definition here, neither Cass nor I, by the way, have any definition up in the head. Because you have that this here is a computer that is meant to serve other people, which is to say the way you ask questions and come up with answers is all for them. It's not for you. What is for you in terms of making decisions for yourself is to follow strategy and authority. So what does that mean? Strategy is how do you relate to the external world? The generator, of which that is your type. There are five types. Generator is the most popular type of all human beings. 60% of the population is generators. Every generator's strategy in life is to respond. So the way that you wind up in the quantum entanglement, alignment, magical synchronicity moments of reality is to respond to reality, not to initiate upon it, but to have a response that is organic to something from the outside and to listen to your inner authority, which for you is called emotional authority, which it, the shortest way to talk about this is to say you're going to have some kind of emotional wave that goes up and down and up and down and up and down until you gently arrive at a knowing of a sort of neutral yes or neutral no. Best advice we give people with emotional authority is don't choose things at the height of the wave. And don't choose things at the base of the wave. Ride the wave, ride the wave, ride the wave until there's clarity. And the clarity will be not that exciting and very, very gentle. We say to generators, you'll only ever be about 60% sure of anything in terms of decisions for yourself.
So like now, if you're going, yes, probably not.
Well, that's so going, interesting because I'm going, yes, not it's like just an emotional, wait. Like high... I'm kind of like my true happiest state is pretty in the middle.
Yeah. And that'd be because you have open G center right here, but that's a different conversation. I'm just talking about when you make decisions, if somebody says like, hey, do you want to come lead this workshop in Jamaica? And at first you're like, I'm going to fucking do it. And then later you're like, I'm not going to do that. I don't want to do that. We would just say, wait through the up and down until it's like, yeah, I'm going to do that. Or no, I'm not going to do that. And maybe for you, you're saying your wave is short and easy to ride. Maybe that's what you're describing. I'm not sure. But that's what emotional definition usually looks like, is there's a bit of an emotional wave you go through. And we just say, just wait until the clarity arrives. But perhaps for you, it comes quite quickly. Sounds like that's what you...
No, but okay. I think I love that because that was very helpful. Because I'm kind of an even keel person, but I do have this thing. I'm like, I don't know. Should I? Should I not?
Exactly. Exactly.
Should I do it then? Should I?
Exactly. And the mind will have, you will have a very computational set of good reasons for both sides, probably because you have definition in the mind. Just remember, your mind is not here for you. It's for them. So all the things you're doing where you're speaking to people and you're coaching people, I'm sure it's incredibly, you've got a lot of specific ideas that are good and useful for them. When you're making your own decision, just know you're always going to go through the should I, shouldn't I. And you'll know when the wave ends and it lands in this is how it was taught to me. And I have emotional definition, so I have a fair amount of experience with this one. You'll have a feeling of like, yeah, okay, that. Or, nah. But you'll go through, yeah, no, yeah, no, yeah, no. Until you're like, okay, yeah. Or, okay, no. And that would be what human design would say. That's how to decide for Rachel. Now, good. I'm so glad that's what we want to be.
Very helpful. You don't think you're crazy.
Yeah, exactly. It decrazifies you. I have to just get to this. Sorry, I am excited. So, but this right here, this channel. Now, the reason I talked about, so there's openness and there's definition. Openness, it's not you. You're inconsistent. You're unreliable, but you're open. You're receptive. Spirituality can come through. Where you have definition, that's the Rachelness of Rachel. Channels, which are two gates that meet up between two centers. So you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 channels in your chart. It's a lot of channels. Channels are just as much, if not more, indicative of aspects of who we each are as individuals than even our centers are. The reason being they're made of two gates. Each gate has its own set of frequencies and themes that it is about. So you have a gate with themes meeting up with a second gate with themes that forms a third channel of themes that is connected at both ends to two centers that have a ton of themes. So a channel is like five energies in one.
Wow.
This channel, and you have six of those. This channel is called the channel of caring for the community and bringing communities together. It's all about this person, a person with this channel would give a lot of fucks about the needs of the community, that everybody's needs in the community get met. And because it's your ego, this is your ego and your ego has definition. So you have a fixed, consistent, reliable way of functioning egoically. And I can talk to you about the motor of the ego and how it operates, because it's different for people with definition in the ego than it is with people who are open in the ego. The ego is connected to the emotional center for you through that channel, meaning you care emotionally a lot about the needs of the community, and you have the energy, because it's connected to your sacral motor, you have the energy to build things and bring things into being and birth things for the sake of the community, because your ego, your emotional center, and your sacral motor, and your root, and your intuition, all these centers here are all connected to each other through channels, meaning they are all on the same page and can hear each other. So they're all working toward the common goal of whatever each of these channels are about. But the one of the two most, I would say, influential channels about in terms of what you'll be interested in, what you'll be up to, are these two right here: community and meeting the needs of the community and caring about the needs of the community. And this guy, the 59-6, which has to do with birth, sex, the rhythms of birth and sex, connecting. It's like they say, when you have the 59-6, you're the one in a relationship who tells the other when the sex is happening, because you're the one in control of it. You're just like, now we're having sex. Or no, so we are not having sex now.
True, in fact. 32 years.
And the other thing about it is, when people with channel 659 get done with baby making, or while they're doing baby making, this channel is also about birthing things into form. So it can be about businesses. It can be about projects. You're here to, you have the energy to birth into form many things. And I will.
I had a whole bunch of businesses when I had babies. So self businesses, self-employed, tons of energy to do all that. Yeah.
There you go. Cool. And then you also have, to that point, you have the 2838, which I also have. I don't have this one above it, 3254, but 2838 is the channel of struggle, which is not about struggling yourself and having a hard time, though it can show up that way. It's about having the energy to struggle through things that most people just give up at a certain point. You're the person, the last one standing, like, okay, if we have to stay here till midnight, that's fine. I have the energy and we stay till midnight and we get it done, metaphorically speaking. So this would be an energy of someone who could have a bunch of businesses and raise a bunch of kids and do all that, because you've got that 2838 that's like, well, if we have to do what we have to do, I have the energy to do it.
Wow.
So we're doing it.
That's cool as hell.
Isn't that fucking crazy? Nuts? Amazing?
It's nuts.
Okay. The last thing I'll say for now, there's so much I could tell you, but this is, we're just getting a beginning here.
Is this why you're the expert and everyone should come to you, Katie?
Thank you. Send them my way. Okay.
Come and learn about yourself. Yes. It is so helpful just to, like, having people say things that is in you, and then you're like, oh, I'm not crazy. Or yeah, that is how I feel more comfortable. Or, oh, okay, that explains why that works or doesn't work for me. That's, you know, that's so powerful, because we are all so unique. Each journey is its own.
Exactly. That's what I love about human design. It's called the science of differentiation. So it shows you how you are uniquely you. And what is, you know, I always say to my clients, it's like, let's get you out of judgment of you. But the way to get you out of judgment of you is we have to show you what is you and what isn't you. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like, you no longer have to judge yourself for not having gate 23. You're never going to have it. Let go. But you also don't have to judge yourself for having gate 41. You're going to have it. So be it, live it, lean in. And we can get real specific now with this fucking roadmap. Just to save time, I want to say the last thing that feels, two quickies that are pretty important. One is, some centers in the body are what's called motors, and they're all down here, and you have every motor in the body defined.
Mm.
Okay. Which means you're a real get things done kind of person, and you really can get things done in a way that a lot of people really, really cannot. And so you're going to, and different motors function differently. So I'll speak just a little bit about that. So the sacral motor is what makes you a generator. Remember I said 60% of the population is generators. That means if you're a generator, you necessarily have this center defined. The sacral motor is like an engine that's constantly going, and it's going like, what are we doing now? 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 Doesn't have to be obsessive or compulsive, not in the mind, but it's the body saying like, okay, I have energy. Now what do we do? Now what do we do? Now what do we do? It's ready to go. That's the strongest motor we have. The emotional center is also a motor. The ego is also a motor. But what I'd like to share with you is this. The ego is a weaker motor than the sacral motor. The ego is a motor that works like this. They say for people with definition in the ego, your ego will latch on to something. And when it latches on, it's like, we are doing this no matter what, to the end of it, until it's done. And ego definition people are like, they like to work so that they can rest. Whereas if you, let's say you had a sacral motor and no definition in the ego, you would be someone who works for the satisfaction of working. Hmm. Now you have both. So you are someone who wants to be balloons.
Zoom is so funny.
Oh.
Okay. Sacral motor wants to be working all the time for the satisfaction of working. So you have that. You also have ego definition that works because it's sort of like the ego says, I will do this no matter what until it's done, but I can't wait until I can rest. And I'm working so that I can rest once it's done. Mm-hmm. So you'll have both of those. But just it's good to be aware that the ego, which for you is connected to caring about the needs of the community.
Alexa, turn off. And it set an alarm.
No worries. You got to hop off. We know.
You know what, though? I thank you for that, Katie, because that very specific thing explains a lot about me, because I do have both of those things. Like, I really have a hard time resting unless I really, and it's not production for the sake of like my value of myself. Mm-hmm. It's more like there's work to be done.
Yes.
And you, it just does.
Yes.
And then the other one is that I really can. And this is what's made me so successful in the businesses that I've had, can multitask and get a ton of shit done. And so it helps to understand,
yes,
like, what is that, that some people don't have that.
Yes.
And I'm grateful for both those things. So
yes,
that is incredibly helpful.
And they're not wrong for not having it.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
The one thing I keep coming out of, just to sort of, I'm gonna book a session with you and get more information. But one of the things that I realize the more that I do this work is like, I spent so much of my time in my life, like, not understanding what it meant to be human and why I was here and why it was so hard. And could I find a way to not have it hurt so much? You know, it just was like being a human being was really difficult. And it is for so many people. Mm-hmm. And then one of my awarenesses that I've had, that I've told this story before, in this room, sitting at this desk, this used to be my art studio. And I was really like, I would have just died if I could have closed my eyes and died. You know, I was just, my heart like hurt so much. And I had the voice that came in that said, you get to come back. You have to come back. So you get to utilize this one. Mm-hmm. And you got a good one, Rachel Ann Little Flower Ferris Harrison. You got a good one. You are middle class. You are educated. You know, like, take a look at these gifts that have been given you and don't waste it. Mm-hmm. And something broke open in me that said, why am I choosing misery? Why am I defending my misery? Why am I clutching and claiming onto my misery if I get to choose?
Right.
And that sort of became this beginning of, am I going to pick myself? And so then you look at each of us with all of these intricate differences. And instead of defending our misery, to be like, tell me more about who I am and how I can follow this map to discover who I am, so that in this lifetime, you know, and not everybody has all of the privileges that I've grown up with, but we each come here, in each of our capacities to learn and to grow. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think all this stuff is amazing and beautiful and wonderful.
And you are the left angle cross of cycles. Your design has a very powerful transformational energy to get things done. Your cross is tied, just reviewing this, to the cycles that all life experiences. You understand that everything is born and dies and then is born again, which is what you just said, that they said to you, you'll be back. Mm-hmm. You have an innate sense about the cyclical process. Things are always changing, becoming better and better through the cyclical process of maturation. Your energy is part of this process, so it's likely your education career will cycle too. I keep getting for you, I just want to, this is just one little psychic download, to throw it away if it doesn't resonate. This will change also. This moment, all this now, there will be a new something later. It's not likely you'll stay in the same job for 25 years unless that job can evolve and change with time. You're here to be a master of the maturation process.
Mm.
So it'd be cool to have you back in 5 years.
See what's going on. I'm not attached. You know, when I first started doing this work, I think you can get really attached. You know, that ego part of yourself is like, this is who I am and this is what I do. And I just continue to ask for guidance of what is the next right thing to do and how I can be of service and light to others and not get attached. And it's not always easy because there's so much pressure to, like, how many downloads do you have and how much money are you making? And how, you know, like, I'm not afraid to do well. You know, part of life is to claim the desire to go ahead and do well. I would love to do well so I can do well in my own life and I can help others, but it's not my obsession. I want to continue to grow and evolve. And I'm super fucking curious to see what that is.
Yeah, that's cool.
That brings.
Yeah. I'll leave you with this idea. Last thing, because you got to go. They say that the generator is here to be satisfied with the work they're doing and to know themselves. So the three questions we give generators to think about, the only questions that are relevant for you as an individual would be, do I have energy for it? Is it satisfying? And does it make me feel more like me? Do I have energy for it? Is it satisfying? And does it make me feel more like me? Because the generator is here to know themselves. But we have to understand that's not true for all five types. So you may be ministering right now to a lot of generators, which is great. What gets tricky is if the projectors think they're here to know themselves more, they're actually not. And that can mess with them a bunch. Hmm. So anyway, it gets really like nuancey at that point, which is pretty fucking fascinating. And, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're a delight. Thank you for being here. I feel we've kept you late, so I want to let you.
Thank you so much for giving me this opportunity. And it's been fun. I've listened to some of your episodes and you are brilliant and wonderful and your energy is amazing. And Cassidy, to see your lighthearted, beautiful, kind soul just pouring through. And, you know, we didn't hang out all the time, but I always felt good in your presence and I feel good in your presence today.
Aww. Me too. I always had a vibe. We just never really hung out that much, but I was like, she's a cool one. She's one of the cool ones.
So yeah. It's
so cool. Yeah,
there's another, I'm not going to remember what his name is off the bat because my mind is not there right now, but another of our high school friends lives right behind us.
Oh, wow.
I'll have to think about what his name is, but literally it's not coming to me at all. Even the first name.
That's okay.
And the story is that the first time he's like, remember we hung out as friends like in high school. And I was like, it is not you. I have almost zero high school memories.
So I squeezed in just a little bit of the remnant.
You're in there. I felt bad for this person and he's over it and whatever, but
that's funny.
Yeah. My skill set is not grasping detailed memories. My skill set is feelings.
No need.
Well, you have emotional definition. That's why. Okay. Bye. Nice to meet you.
It was so great to see you. Fantastic. I think we all have to jump off. So
yeah. Love you guys.
Do your work. Do all your work.
Okay, bye
later. Hey guys, thanks for listening. We'd love to hear from you. Please email us with your questions so that we have questions to answer in the Akashic Records. Our email address is allanswerspod@gmail.com. That's allanswerspod@gmail.com. And if you'd like to find us on Facebook or Twitter, it's @AllAnswersPod. Thank you.
All right. Yeah.
Who wants a mustache ride?
Mixed and edited by Desmond McNeese for We Mixed It, LLC. Go to whatsoundsawesome.com.